on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Oh, does its job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan Tahoué. Capable of anything. Tahoué! Equaliser for Leighton Orient!
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're Leighton Orient from E10. Leighton Orient from E10.
And Leighton Orient from intending, indeed. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour. I'm Andy Gilson in the Phoenix 98 FM studios here in Brentwood, joined by a veritable gang of three tonight. Tony Smith is opposite. How are you, Tone?
Oh, fine, thanks. Good evening and welcome back, Andy. Good to see you, mate.
That's all right. Now, we're going to guess which microphone Darren's on.
Good evening, Andy.
Try again.
Good evening, Andy.
That's better. See, it works. It works. I've not been here for 2 months, and there we are. I mean, there we are, the old professional, straight back into it. How are you, Barry Galvin?
Yeah, great. You haven't been here for 2 months, have you, Andy?
No, I haven't been here for 2 months.
Great.
And I'm sitting here, we're waiting everybody, and the music's about to play, and there's 24 seconds till we cue our programme, and then there's a knock on the door, and it's Barry.
Awesome.
You got here on time.
It's all about timing.
It is.
Is that mic on, by the way?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
It is. Why am I sitting here, then?
No, that one's on.
No, you just want to carry on the.
Don't go on about microphones. These are all working, so.
Microphone-esque.
Yes, thank you very much. Anyway, it was a great victory for Orient on the weekend, and we're all still smiling about that. And we did like the antics and the fact that Steve Evans had the hump, didn't we? And we beaten Stevenage, and Barry's fist in the air there. And Tony, you were there, and it wasn't a great game, was it, by any means? But it was such a vital win, wasn't it?
It was completely different, basically, to any other game that we've seen this season. We decided, obviously, to go direct and fight Stevenage with Stevenage, if you like. And we got the goal, and it came off at the end of the game. So, great.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Before we get on to Darren and Barry and the guys, and we dissect the match a little bit and have a chat about the afters at the end as well, let's hear what Richie had to say to Dave Victor at the end of the match.
Richie, thanks for joining us, and congratulations. Josiah deserved those very, very big points.
Deserved it. I thought it was a nothing game. Probably shown one moment of quality. I thought for the first 20 minutes of the second half, they bombarded us and it was very good. First half, we probably just edged it a little bit in terms of quality moments, but it was just, it's just carnage, isn't it? It's just kick it, boot it, edit. You don't really want to set your teams up like that, but you have to come in and match the physicality because they're very, very good at what they do. They've got foot. Players at the top end of the pitch are very, very effective. In Roberts, I think they've got one of the best players in the league. Reed's scored a lot of goals. And that's what's pleasing. We didn't have a team out today to physically really match them in terms of size, in terms of experience. But I thought the players acquitted themselves really well. At half-time, they make four subs and they're bringing on players with hundreds and hundreds of games, experience. So a really good result in terms of the performance. What I really want to see my teams do on a footy pitch, but you need to do it, you need to come in, you need to match them, and four stages we did.
And the game that was decided with a rare moment of quality from Max Sanders.
Yeah, good finish. Match been a little frustrated because we've moved him around a little bit, different formations, and we just give him a license. We've got no bodies. Ollie O'Neill pulls out a train on, I think it was Wednesday, hamstring. Because we've overworked him, we're down to the bare bones. We don't have one fit winger in the squad, so we have to play Max on the left and give him a license to roam in and find pockets. And and run. But obviously then, getting his shape defensive, I thought 4-2 would work against these. I thought he did. I watched him in the week against Peterborough. I thought he was excellent. And I didn't want to play for like Peterborough have got. Peterborough's worth the risk because of the players that they've got in terms of the wingers and how dynamic they are. And if you outweigh that risk and you get the press wrong, they can really, really hurt you. Stevenage very rarely get the press wrong. Really good pressing from the front, so I didn't really want to play out and edge them onto us. So, we're down to the bare bone. We've come here, we've got nothing to play for, and we've got a good result because of the... because the lack of bodies and the attitude that we show, we've managed to dig 3 points out.
And a clean sheet, you defended as a team?
Defended as a team, Sol was very good. We got blocked on one set play. It was Roberts who had a free header. But apart from that, when you come in, you expect loads of ricochets and loads of balls. These are brilliant. For me, they're the best team in the league, where they put balls in the box and then they get the second ball, whether it be the edge, whether it be in and around the second 6 yard box. So we didn't really have to. Don't know how many shots he had in our goal, but I can't remember being overworked. So like I say, we've nullified them, which is the main thing when you come here.
Travelling fans played their part and they enjoyed the celebrations with you at the end.
Well, we come here last year and we had a full house here, and I know it was a lot colder, but I think we bought 1,800 and we didn't make a murmur, and they bullied us from the first minute. We're 1-0 down after 8 minutes, we're down to 10 men after 20 minutes, and we just did not get nothing out of the supporters. And I get that when you go early down and the man sent off, but today I thought he was outstanding.
Before that, there seemed to be a bit of nonsense with Dan Sweeney involved.
Listen, what's the word called? Shithousery, is it? But it is, though. You come here, these love it. These do it all the time. And the fans are giving me jam. I love the supporters. You come here, they pay the money, and if they want to abuse me and call me, it's great. But then when I come back at you, I don't. So I had a little trophy lift, and then Sweeney's not happy with me. He's a big lad. I wish someone smaller would have come over, but listen, I think that's just normal banter. If I do that with the supporters, they laugh at me, I laugh at them, and we move on. The fact that someone's come over and escalated it a little bit has turned it into a little bit of a problem. I don't think he needed to do it. Did I need to do that? Probably not. But like I say, I'm down to the bare bones. We've got no players, we've got no squad, and we come away to six in the league and fight and scrap and give our supporters a really, really good day. So why shouldn't we do it?
Does the respite come at a good time now with the international break?
Probably. Hopefully we might have Ollie O'Neill will be 10 days, 2 weeks. So he'll be touch and go. But apart from that, we won't have anybody else.
No chance of Jordan Graham or Dan Ajayi?
No, they will be seasoned. If we get to the playoff final, we might wheel them out.
I look forward to that.
Right,
thank you very much, Richie. Thank you.
Right, that was Richie with Dave Victor after the match. And we're going to come over to Darren Burrows. And Darren, you were there as he puts his microphone in action.
Yeah, I was there on Saturday as well. Agree with what Tony said, really. We at Stevenage, Tony, was it?
Yeah.
And I think that was spot on. Richie got it spot on. Took him 6 attempts, didn't it? Bless him. But he got it right in the end. I thought the one and only chance they had fell to Reed. He didn't take it. And after that, I thought we were comfortable, frankly. I thought Beckles was really good. He was my man of the match, Andy, on Saturday. Beckles was my pick.
Important that he was, because he's had a couple of games where people have been, not too sure.
I don't think he has recently. I don't think he had the greatest start to the season. But I felt a bit... I couldn't really sort of... I understood the comment, but when he said about them picking themselves, when it was Beckles and thank you. But I don't think Beckles is that kind of character. I think that whether he's guaranteed the shirt or not, I think he'll give you the sign. I just thought he played a real leader's role, and him and Prattley were so needed.
Yeah, I mean, whether he's playing or not, Beckles, he is a strong presence in the dressing room, isn't he, Barry?
Yeah, he's an experienced player. He's a leader out there, I think. And I've never been so convinced of an away defeat as I was before the game on Saturday. Coming off the back of that, a rather uninspiring 0-0 draw against Port Vale, where we really looked devoid of anything, tired, ideas, leggy, whatever you want to call it. I've never been so convinced we were going to get tonked 3-0. I was as surprised as anyone, but that shows resilience. It's good character. If anyone would have said we'd have got 4 points from those two games, I think we'd have been, yeah, great, you know, yeah. We'll beat Port Vale, we'll get this point over Stevenage, brilliant, that would have been, but we got it the other way round. But, you know, as is always often the case with Leighton Orient, but, yeah, I'm really pleased that we got a result because it was Steve Evans.
Yeah, I think the reason why Omar stood out was that he didn't actually have to initiate attacks with his feet going off to the fullbacks and things like that. It was very, the game plan was obviously Solbrun was going to get the ball and Willie at 60 yards every time he got it. So all he had to do was defend for 90 minutes. And it suited him down to the ground because he's...
Yeah, head it, kick it.
Yeah, head it and kick it from the penalty box. Yeah, he's as good as it gets. But if he's up at the halfway line trying to pass it about, sometimes you don't go...
I felt, again, I'm going to agree with you again there, Tony. I didn't really think of that at the time, but now you put it like that, I thought you were right. It was an old-fashioned centre-half's old-fashioned League One game, wasn't it? And an old-fashioned performance from a player that is capable of... he's capable of playing out of back, as you said, but he does dwell on the ball at times, I agree. And he didn't have the opportunity to do that, did he?
No, I mean... My brother normally has kittens when he's watching. He's a decent centre-half himself, so he would have enjoyed watching him if he'd been at the game, but he missed out, so there we go.
They're talking to centre-halves, so we're all glad that Carl Piergiani weren't there, weren't we, as well?
He's got the sign on us going back to Salford when he got those two goals and the free kicks that time. It was over Christmas we played, and he's got in there and got at the other end. But he scores some set pieces against other teams. I mean, you always see his name popping up in the scores and you look at the highlights.
When there were a lot of their fans and the playing, oh, with Carl Piergiani been playing, we wouldn't have won the game. But that's just sad. It's just
doesn't work like that football.
No, of course it doesn't. No, but I heard a few comments like that, so it's... Who knows? Never know, will we?
They got very worried, Stevenage, any time the ball went backwards or sideways, which is true. They're good defending a lot of the time, but they're obviously, you know, they're used to seeing the ball pinged into the penalty box all the time. And far worse, you know, we've got a little bit used to passing it about because, you know, it won us the league last year, so we don't mind seeing it.
We have discussed this before, I think, Chaz, but what's your thoughts on generally, would you want to be, here's an open question, would you want to be successful, in inverted commas, and watch that type of football? Or watch a team play football, play from the back, play some entertaining triangles and stuff and cutting through the midfield. Personally, and it's not because I don't support Stevenage, but I'd rather see a footballing team than watch people win, so to speak. Well, not so to speak, win. But play that direct type of like football. What do you think?
Well, percentage football, really, isn't it? Percentage just whack football. It in there. Good and hope for
although
the best.
They are, I mean, I don't find it entertaining or particularly edifying.
You say that though, when you go back to Stoke City a few years ago, you know, they played pretty mind-numbing football, but they were getting 1-0s and getting promoted and everything. And you know, it's difficult because the fans get used to winning, Darren, and a win's a win, and people get carried away with the results.
Yeah, I think. In all honesty, my viewpoint is that if the team win and the style's not great, I can live with that.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm with you, Barry. I mean,
I think we're all with Barry.
Yeah, because
I'd rather see it the other way round.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, I enjoyed the game on Saturday. I did.
Oh, there's a time to mix it up. There's a time to play long and there's a time to play football. I agree with that. But I'd rather watch a footballing team that can do a bit of both than one team the team that can only do that one trick.
Yeah, I mean, we're loyal to our team, so we turn up whether they ping it long or we turn up if they try and play out. But ideally, I'd like to see us try and play out. And I think the two things, we were successful last year playing it out. So
I think it really is.
Both, yeah.
But go, guys, it's easier, and that's what I think Richie's installed. Horses for courses, you know, you've got to be able to change.
Well, first time he's done it, though,
do.
Andy. First time he's matched up a team in that respect. I can't remember another team performance under Richie where he's done that. I think that's, yeah, am I wrong? I might be wrong.
And he's got the result.
Absolutely, he got it right.
And we got a really nice, tidy goal.
The goal, the finish by Sanders was, yeah, I agree with you. He needed that, didn't he?
Well, it's confidence boost, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good player, Max Sanders, I think, you know. I think he's got that in him, and yeah, it would be a confidence boost. But I think we have matched teams in formation and maybe in the style of play, maybe mixing it up before, but I think you're right. This is the first time we've actually directly tried to mash him blow for blow.
I can't recall us going that direct, Bal.
It was a gamble, because physicality-wise, you would think there was only one winner there, wouldn't you? But well played to the lads for digging in and getting a result.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, right, let's get to the end of the match, which caused a bit of a Ferrari, didn't it now?
Ferrari,
whatever you want to call it.
That's what Nigel Travis drove to go and get the Welsh per... what's it called? What are they calling the lads, all the singing lads, they called in the song about Welsh player.
You've lost me, yeah.
You know, heard that one.
I know. I'm in a surreal universe here, but it's like Darren. Sorry, I
mean, there's a song about who's the centre half we signed from Swansea? Not the more recent one.
Brandon Cooper.
Cooper, and it's Nigel Travis went to Wales in a red Ferrari.
Can you sing it for us, Dan?
No.
you don't. If he sings like he talks, I don't want to hear it.
I'll move on.
So let's be fair. Richie's had his fair share of run-ins with referees and disciplinaries lately. You wouldn't believe it, would you? But... listen, he's gone out on the pitch, and it is a bit of a wind-up, isn't it? Come on, let's be honest. He's given it large there, and, the fans are loving it. But
Steve Evans does it every week.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's the point.
Barry, yeah. But do you know, I think Richie's just being a bit of a sod, really, wasn't he? And, he's wound him up. He's wound him up, and he's ended up with a player confronting him, etc., and everybody piling in, and...
It's sort of priced in with Richie, though, a bit of that, isn't it, really? I mean, you have to, that's what you get with Richie, isn't it? I mean, you get plenty of passion, you get plenty, he's not going to stand around under a bolly and, quietly to a 2-0 defeat. I mean, you're going to get it for...
But what I'm trying to get at, do you think he knew what he was doing all along?
Oh, undoubtedly.
I mean, it was funny. I just think, we don't need any more...
So nice of him to give me a wave. I loved it.
Yeah. But we don't need any more trouble, do we?
It's like you're saying that his character, he would do that, which I love. I love the passion and stuff. But it's funny because we had Dan Agi up on the third floor just in the last home game. Mm-hmm. And he's... he's a very plastic guy. He's a really nice guy, but he's quite softly spoken and plastic. Mm. And yet he done the Kevin Nolan celebration in front of the Bolton fans and the Portsmouth one. What was the guy at the Portsmouth celebration?
Oh, he did it, yeah. Benjani, it was. Yeah.
Now, he's doing the same, really. So I know it's so tongue-in-cheek, but and he's the opposite sort of character, but I think that's...
You could certainly see the crowd coming down that time at Portsmouth. I remember seeing that now. Some of them didn't take too kindly to it, but, I mean, Portsmouth had a good season, didn't they? So.
Going back to Richie, though, Evans got under his skin. Mm. And he got under his skin last season when they done us 3-0 at their place.
Yeah.
And Evans come out with some very Steve Evans like comment about how we thought we were going to win the league and we thought we were the best team.
Well, we did.
And basically, basically, Richie, to be fair to him, kept his powder dry.
Yeah.
He didn't react. He waited.
It
was sulfured away where he reacted. Mm-hmm. Where it was in the bag. So he'd got under his skin, and I'm glad he did, because would a Richie then thought of changing that formation? Would he be that desperate to get that result? He'll go against his football principles.
Yeah.
Well,
could be that. Yeah.
But the thing with Evans is, let's be fair, none of us know him personally, right? You know, we know of him.
None of us want to know him personally.
No, but I mean, to be fair, we don't really know whether he's a nice guy or not.
We know of his reputation and his antics.
I mean, we don't know him, so we can't really judge the fella properly. But I'd give the opinion he's a bit of a one of those characters where if he's your manager, it's fine.
No.
If he's the other team's manager, you'll hate him.
No, I agree with you there, Andy. No, I'm with you on that one. I've said many a time, you have to respect what he's achieved and what he's achieving.
His track record is very good.
I'm not going to go against that, but we all have people in life that we can respect, but that doesn't mean to say we agree with the way they've gone about it or we like them as people.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree with that. I wouldn't want him as our manager. I'd have a real conflict of interest. I would. I really would.
Yeah. Are you saying you'd resign?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, do you know what I mean? As a supporter, purely sort of supporter. Yeah. It'd be hard for me to support someone who I've not had a quite.
I mean, he wasn't on the bench Saturday because he had some suspension on, I believe. And you got used. The thing is, from watching opposite, and I know if I'm in the East End, have it like you know, you see him. and he's jumping out off the bench and he's coming out to the line for the first 70 minutes, and he begins to tire. It's a bit like watching a 400 metre run getting into the last 100. You know, his fitness has gone. Yeah.
He's definitely not a 400 metre runner.
He might have been in his youth.
I think he has to choreograph his movements 20 minutes.
Struggling to imagine him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's tying up. You know, yeah, it's lactic acid again.
I mean, he's in trouble. He's in trouble, Barry, isn't he? Evans is in trouble for disciplinary reasons. And is he in trouble for doing the interview after the match?
I think so. Yeah.
Who did, by the way, chaps, who did he blame for the defeat on Saturday?
I think it might have been a referee, Barry.
Oh, they're so unlucky with refs.
I just couldn't believe that. Steve blamed
anyway,
the referee.
Anyway, what's Steve Evans hour on Phoenix FM?
We'll leave on that.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's in trouble, so both managers are getting disciplinary problems this season, obviously.
I think the best thing to say, they're both strong characters.
Yeah, they're both strong characters, and, he's a fiery Scotsman, and I think it's fair to say...
Everyone's an edgy mank.
Well, you know, he's he's due in next week. I bet you better not be here.
I'm more than happy to say that to him. He's due in, Andy.
But I always say... People, you know, always say down south, they always say, oh, the people up north are a bit rude. I don't think they're rude. I think they're to the point.
Oh, I don't know.
I think they're economical.
That's a whole different discussion and topic for another time.
And they say what they think. They don't,
let's have that one when Richie finally buggers off and takes a bigger job somewhere.
Well, you know, hopefully he's successful.
That's a long time away.
Yeah, well, you know, we'd like to see Orient successful. And I'm sure if Manchester United came knocking for Richie, he'd be on the first bus up the road. But there you go. Anyway, let's have this week's Victor's View, shall we, from our good friend David Victor.
It was so satisfying to see the O's beat Stevenage at their own game. Richie Welland's again demonstrating his exceptional tactical ability, switching formation and approach to adjust to the unique challenge that Steve Evans' teams always present. It was a game of individual physical duels, and the O's showed so much determination. Direct percentage passes delivered long, and it was settled with a rare moment of genuine quality. Max Sanders' first goal for the O's, a special one, and credit has to be given to Soturio for the part that he played in creating space for the former Lincoln man to demonstrate composure and accuracy inside the penalty area when it was needed most. Like so many in this campaign, Max has had more than his fair share of injuries, but I've always been impressed when he's been able to have a prolonged period in the starting 11. The international break might have come at a good time for Richie Welland's men, time to focus, and for the likes of Ronnie O'Neill and George Moncur to recover from injury and illness, ready for the remaining seven games. Saturday's victory, of course, keeps the O's in the hunt for the playoffs. I think there are five clubs in contention for the final sixth place. Portsmouth look finally to be heading for automatic promotion. Derby and Bolton in the race to join them. The Rams' victory over the Trotters at the weekend gives Paul Warren's side that all-important advantage in a frantic dogfight. Whichever club loses that battle, they're likely to join Barnsley and Peterborough in the playoffs, with Oxford, Stevenage and Blackpool together with the in-form Imps ahead of the O's in the challenge to clinch that all-important sixth place. Lincoln City's recent form has been incredible. 8 wins in the last 10, 16 scored in the last 3 matches. Another huge game when the O's travel to Cinsel Bank when the full league programme resumes on Good Friday, and it doesn't get any easier with the visit of Peterborough to follow on Easter Monday. It's going to be a fascinating test and a very exciting Easter programme. Just 3 League One games survived this weekend. Derby travel to Northampton, Port Vale to Burton, whilst the O's faithful will be hoping that Carlisle can record only their second win in 10 against a Stevenage side who've only gained 2 wins in their last 10 league matches.
Thanks very much, Dave Victor. This week's Victor's View, much appreciated as usual. Now then, TV cameras were at Brisbane Road yesterday for the football governance bill that was being touted around to try and tighten up things, guys, where... You know, we all know that football isn't very well run with financially, and it's a much needed bill, isn't it?
Is it?
Oh, don't you think so?
No, I'm sceptical. I'm sceptical that it'll work. I'm sceptical of any government involvement in business. Having been in business all my life, I find it very, very, how to put it, I find that they really don't understand the business that they're trying to govern. More often than not, I find they meddle, I find they make things worse, and I find that, frankly, I've never come across a situation where I've seen it work in any business. Government intervention. No, not for me.
Well, I think the big thing was European Super League, 50+1 fan ownership, and I think this one's coming up as a sort of a second best, isn't it? So we've got to be seen to be doing something. I can't see it much happening.
If it's serious, I agree with it. In principle, I agree with it, definitely. I don't want the ivory tower people just to snub the lower leagues. I don't appreciate how important the lower leagues are for developing players and coming through. They're all, you know, they're all in the X amount of million from the TV revenues and from China and India and stuff like that. And yeah, as David Sullivan said yesterday, why would you want to change it? Why would he want to change it? Yeah, he's at the top. So I think it's very short-sighted of them to think that, you know, we're all right, Jake. I applaud it. I welcome it. I don't know if it'll be toothless or not. I hope it's not.
Well, let's see what Mark Devlin said about it.
Lucky that we've got the board of directors and the ownership we've got. You know, our financial results show that we lose a considerable amount of money. That has to come from somewhere. The alternative is that you reduce expenditure. Most of our expenditure really and truly is on the field, so clubs would then end up being less competitive. It's one of the reasons why we're looking at a bigger stadium and trying to expand Brisbane Road and get more people in here, at least in the short term, is that we need to generate more monies so that the money we do put into the playing squad is affordable but allows us to be as competitive as possible. So we're trying to reduce the losses year in, year out. I believe that we're quite a sensible organisation. We're not overstaffed. We try and manage our finances pretty closely, and we're getting better, but we still lose money. Hopefully this bill will help level out the playing field, I think, a little bit between the EFL and the Premier League, particularly the Championship, where the cliff edge, the whole parachute payment system really just distorts the competition. So for us, it's about ensuring that it helps us ensure. Nigel's been on record as saying his legacy, he wants to make sure that his legacy is that Orient is around in another 100 years' time, that it's not just been a great 6 or 7 years since he's joined the club as owner and chairman, but that the club is around for a longer period of time. And for that to happen, it certainly will be helped by a fairer distribution of an awful lot of money that's sloshing around at the top level of football.
Right, thank you. That was Mr. Devlin there. I had to think what I was doing there. Sorry, Mark. Mark Devlin there with his views on things. And the parachute payment thing was brought up. Now, my opinion is it literally rigs the competition, this sort of parachute payment. It encourages people to be frivolous with their finances, and it's also unfair on the other clubs trying to compete, Barry.
Does anyone know what an average parachute payment is? I haven't got the figures in front of me. So what are you awarded by failing in the Premier League? What are you?
I think it's about 120 million.
Okay, 120 million.
Over three seasons.
Okay, so let's say 40, let's cut it in a third, right? So we've got 40 million, right, averagely. So you've just failed in the Premier League, you get £40 million. Plymouth are having to survive on 12 million this year in the Championship, in the same division. So,
yeah,
anyone want to explain
it's a closed shop, Barry, and it's
like, this is what, welcome, we'll see you next year.
Yeah.
There you go, some more money.
It's not failed as in this, Barry, but it probably could be the first season ever where the three that went up from the Championship last season will be the three that come down from the Premier League, and the three go in the other direction will be the three.
Which highlights the difference. But again, it's getting wider. The gap's getting wider. It highlights the fact that Burnley, you know, tore up the... a lot of it's to do with... what's his name? Company trying to play the same sort of football and a bit naive, maybe. But they tore up the Championship and they're bottom of the Premier League. Or is it bottom of Sheffield United? One or two. But it just shows that the gap's getting wider.
Yeah, I believe it came in as a price of the Premier League actually sending a little bit of money down to the EFL in the first place to try and protect the people who are going to go down. But it rigs the competition completely at the moment.
It came in because the clubs coming up were signing players on Premier League wages and then finding themselves straight back down into the Championship the following season and literally going bust because they didn't have the money.
There should be caveats that if we go down, your wages reduce to thus.
Exactly. Their argument was that the players wouldn't have come unless they were on 2 and 3 and 4 year deals. Well, I'm sorry, that's just not good enough.
Is it fair to like paper? I'd say, let's say Middlesbrough. Okay, who traditionally were, or, you know, Derby County or wherever, who traditionally, you know, were a Premier League team not so long ago. It's not fair on them that they haven't been in the Premier League for a while, and they're competing with people that have been given £40 million to start with.
Can I just sort of say this? I want to say this. I want this governance to work. Don't get me wrong. Please don't confuse it with me saying it won't work or I don't believe it's... I just find that any kind of government intervention invariably doesn't work. And what the clubs I think will do, the Premier League clubs, they will find other ways.
Yeah,
they'll find other ways.
Unfortunately, you know, there's always those people that do that. They try and find the loophole.
They have not invested all that money for anybody to come along and say, you're going to have to do it this way. They'll find other ways.
It's a difficult one because, in one way, you can't tell an individual company how they can run, as long as it's lawful, you know, as long as they're not running illegally. You can't really tell somebody how they can run their own business. If they want to get investment from overseas or wherever they're getting, you can't sort of cap them and say, you can't do this, you can't do
that. Well, you can have lots of rules.
You can, but it's
not
right,
is it? You can have lots of rules, and there are lots of rules. Public companies have to abide by the stock exchange rules, for example.
Yeah.
The problem is, you'll find that they will find ways to circumnavigate the rules.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have, you know, this percentage of, you know, revenue, etc. I mean, in principle, it's obvious. I mean, we run small businesses, I mean, three of us here, you know, and you know, I always say with these clubs, like, would say Manchester City, it's the equivalent, you know, I've got a small clothes shop business. You know, it's equivalent to me buying my stock, selling it all for 1 pence a piece, having a queue right round the corner, being the busiest shop in the high street, selling everything for 1 pence each, and losing millions of pounds and
to drive all the competition away.
Well, basically, I mean, you know, saying, look at me, I'm the busiest shop in the street, and it's an empty victory. And everything Manchester City win is to me, meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. And Chelsea and all the other clubs, they're losing millions and millions of pounds. To me, it's an absolute nothing. You've won nothing because you won it unfairly. I mean, it's a false victory out of your means of... But, you know, you've done it out of your means, financial means. Anybody that has an endless checkbook can have that result. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And from reading what I've read about it, it seems to be a hell of a lot of reliance on these fit and proper tests for directors and owners coming in. Now, I know from what I used to do that anybody can tell you what they're going to do. It's what they actually do is completely different to what someone's going to tell you what to do. So I can't have too much faith in that side of it. But I hope they can do something, because a more even playing field between the divisions, it'd be a better product. It'd be something better to
watch. Thing is, Tony, you'll always have the big... You know, let's be fair. You know, Manchester United are always going to be a bigger club than Leighton Orient, right? It doesn't matter about what finances, because they're going to get, you know, 10 times the gate. They've got a bigger overseas following, etc., etc. So the big clubs, in essence, will still always be the big clubs.
Well, because they're a brand.
Yeah, but they still should be run within their means of what revenue they can bring in. And I don't mean, you know, tax write-offs from billionaires. I mean what they can actually genuinely bring in through the door, through investment and through the gate receipts. So they will still be the big clubs. It just means players' salaries will have to be adjusted, you know, to more realistic levels, and across the board, and not just in this country, around the world. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, it seems to me, Andy, what they want to do is, and the worst culprits are people like Brighton and Brentford. They're the worst culprits. I can almost understand the Man United's, the Liverpool's, taking their view. You know, it wasn't so long ago that Brighton and Brentford were down there with us.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And you know, that sticks in my craw more than, say, Liverpool or Man U. The thing with this, they want a cartel, don't they? Let's be honest. What they want is they want to bring in American-style, no relegation.
Well, yeah.
And they'll fix it. They don't want risk. I don't want a Nottingham Forest coming up through and being a major force in Europe like they were in the 80s. I don't want Watford going from Division 4 to Division 1. They want it all for themselves.
Yeah.
And do you know what, boys? You can't have it.
No.
The game belongs to everybody.
The thing with any sport, any team sport, and obviously with football, is it's the dream. If the dream's taken away... Then
exactly,
you haven't got anything left, because you know the whole thing. And he said, with the FA Cup, you know, you get something like, you know, I don't know, Romford getting through to the third round of the FA Cup, and they draw, you know, Orient even, you know, or Arsenal. I mean, it's a wonderful day for
them. Let's be honest,
you know?
Everyone wants Luton Town to start this season, don't they?
Just out of spite to the others, you know, just to say that they did. But that's what I'm saying. The dream is that, you know, you're an Exeter City supporter. You dream that maybe one day you're going to get up there, Championship, maybe knocking on the door of the Premier League.
Well, it says the dream's going one way and it's a jeopardy in the other that makes the exciting sport. The trouble is, it's being run as a business, being run as a massive, massive multinational concern, and people's emotions are tied up in it. And that's where you get this clash. Because people want to be emotionally involved with their team, and it's run as a business.
Yeah,
and that's why.
But you see you see how great it is when something like, you know, Maidstone with George get all the way through in the cup. Okay, they hit the buffers in the end, which they were always going to get a thumping in the end, weren't they? But the dream was, you know, and they believed in it, and their fans have had a fantastic time. And it made everybody else smile.
This doesn't matter
to
those people. They don't care about Maidstone United's dream.
But that's what all these
people care about, is protecting their investment and being at the top of the tree in a format that they can is digestible to them and them alone.
But give me
a worldwide brand. It's not football.
I want a European league. I want to get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
Yeah, I want to get rid of them.
I'm quite happy. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'd be happy for a reset. Get rid of all the...
I'm with you. I don't know about you, Tom, but I've been saying along with that.
I mean, going back to our level, if you like, is the idea of salary caps gone from the ball? Because, I mean, Devlin was talking about being financially sustainable and, you know, going to our means. That was the idea of salary caps, was that everyone in the league could actually, you know, pay their wages and not lose £3 million a year. Yeah. Has that gone by the ball completely? Or is that in the new legislation? I don't know.
Well, we'll have to wait till it's actually out there.
I think it has, Tony, and I think the reason salary caps are so difficult, you're going into employment law there. You're coming outside of football law and governance, and you're going into employment law. And it's a subject I know a little bit more about than I do about football.
It's a minefield, Darren.
That's one of the reasons I think the salary cap is a great idea in principle, but then all of a sudden
you get incentives you've got to change
employment law.
Yeah, and then this is something you can do. You can change.
It's doable. Anything's doable.
And there'll be people to say you can't, you know, morally do that, but you can do anything.
Well,
but
the only thing as well, there was a guy called Jimmy Hill that put an end to the salary cap in football. And a load of young lads, and lasses now, which is great, all got very, very wealthy because of their talent. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. So I'm not a huge fan of salary capping. What I'm a bigger fan of is basically football running itself in a way that's for the greater good of all, and running itself in an economically viable situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone crazy. And I always, funny, we were talking about this the other day, actually, and I said to people, the thing was, football changed dramatically. I never forget it happening. Football used to be about £5 million a season, you know, that they were paying. The whole season of football and the match of the day and big match and whatever, and the home internationals. And BBC, I think it was, they paid £18 million. Just going back a long time now, they paid £18 million to show E.T. on Christmas Day, the movie. And at that moment, I remember Kevin Dickinson, who played for Orient, saying to me, it's disgraceful. They've paid £18 million for, you know, an hour and a half movie on Christmas Day, and they're trying to get football all year for £5 million. Mm. And at that point, it changed. And that was the sort of thing. And that was not just Kevin's opinion. That was most football clubs' opinion. Hang on a minute. We're getting turned over here. They're getting hundreds of hours of footage for peanuts. And so now it's gone the other way. Of course, they're paying billions. Things
just
gone potty.
Say about what you said about, I ain't got no problem with them getting wealthy. But to a point, I think this has run away with itself. I think, you know, it's £250,000 a week, £300,000 a week.
Yeah, I mean,
really?
It's not real, is it?
Where do you draw the line, Barry? It's a free market economy.
It is.
But no one's got the bottle to do it. If someone had the bottle, that the one country said, right, okay, we pay a maximum of this, all the talent would go temporarily to Germany and Italy.
There isn't enough jobs for them all, is there?
Exactly, and then it would resettle.
Going back to Tony's point, Tony, what you were saying was about salary cap. What actually exists is you can only spend a percentage of your turnover, and there's a difference between wage capping and that, because the difference is with that is you have a budget then. So you can have one player on 10 grand and another on 1,000. You work into a budget, which is currently the way Orion and all the league run. To give clarity to your point.
Trouble is, you've got to have a wage structure within the club, because if you...
Of course, Beth.
You know, you can't have, what you just said, player on 10 grand and 1,000, because, you know...
You can.
You can if it's a junior, but I'm saying as a rule, if we've all been there a few years or we come in, if you're having a nightmare and you're on 8 grand a week and I'm on 2 grand and I'm looking at it across, saying, well, you're paying him 8 grand, he can't
even... It presents problems.
Control his own pee, you know, and...
5.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, you've got to have that structure. I mean, we saw it under Becchetti, where he brought in under... Sorry, I said the word. I owe a fiver in the pot there. You know, where we had players on 12 grand and 8 grand and the rest of the players on 2 grand.
Disparate,
and, of course, the players on 2 grand are going, well, I want more money. You know, and you lose the plot. But what I'm saying, we come back to this structure of the football, and the bottom line is the big clubs will still be big clubs. And as Barry just said, if they all adjusted the top pay to, let's just say, 500,000 at the top level, that's an awful lot of money.
Well, look, I hope the governance and the legislation works. I'm cynical that it will, but I to sort of, you know, perhaps move on from this conversation, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, but the thing, we don't forget, when you're talking about top players, even if, like Barry said, you bring in a limit on what the club's going to pay, it doesn't detract from their personal sponsorship deals that they can get. So if they're a top player, they can go and endorse lots of stuff and earn millions of pounds. But the actual club wages has got to be adjusted to a realistic level.
No one needs 300 grand a week.
Well, listen, everyone needs another pound, Barry.
Tell my wife.
That, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
No one needs it.
Yeah, if you've got someone indoors who spends a pound and a penny for every pound you earn, you know you do need another pound. but I'm saying that you're not taking away the player's right to earn more money.
Yeah, they could do it outside of the...
Exactly.
The
if football. You're a top player, you'll get endorsements and you'll be a millionaire anyway. But the clubs have got it. It's got to
change. It's run away.
What you say, cut them loose and say, tell you what, you lot, you big so-called 12 or whatever, off you go.
Well, this is the thing with this governance, what I think it'll end up doing.
Yeah, well, go and bore each other to death and play each other 5 times a season, you know, 6 times a
season.
They
can all go and behave like C-Link did with the staff.
Yeah, and off you go, and we won't miss you because the rest of us will enjoy our football. I mean, I'll get more pleasure watching George with Maidstone in the FA Cup than I did watching Manchester City winning anything, you know, because that's a real football team. You know, working on a budget with a fellow whose enthusiasm was infectious, and he got everybody on board. And
I couldn't agree more. To me, that's the essence
of the game. Anyway, I'm ranting a little bit, aren't I? Talk about rants. Shall we have a rant from you know who, Mr. Matt Roper?
A win is a win, as they say in football, and it's actually pretty decent enough win at Stevenage. And whilst it's not the sort of sexy football that we've been used to, 3 points at a place like that where you roll your sleeves up and get stuck in is just as satisfying. Stevenage against Leighton Orient has now been bigged up to some sort of Crystal Palace Brighton derby. It isn't. It's still 3 points. Yes, we don't particularly like their manager, and certainly after Saturday, they don't like ours. But you've actually got two winners in the dugouts. You can't deny Steve Evans's record, and you can't deny Richie Wellens's record at Swindon and obviously with Leighton Orient. We saw after the game the best and worst on the socials from fans. There was some decent banter from the Borough fans, some decent banter back from the O's fans. However, what we can't pass up or pass over was the absolutely disgusting comment on the Borough forum from some guy called Chuds, who has now protected his tweets, presumably after a lot of abuse from O's fans, when he wished Richie Wellens rather he was dead than just in Edinburgh. That's just wrong. It's vile, it's disgusting. Have a bit of banter, have a go at each other, in the ground, out the ground. But comments like that have just got no place in football. Over the weekend, we saw the same thing with Manchester United and Liverpool. Comments or actions inside or outside the ground about Hillsborough and the Munich air disaster. Now, I'm no shrinking violet, as most know, and I've given more opposition benches more stick in my time than I care to remember. But if an opposition bench gives a little bit back to me, what's wrong? It's banter, it's football, it's a laugh. But keep it real and keep it sensible. the disgusting and vile comment was absolutely disgraceful, and I was glad to see a number of Stevenage fans disassociating themselves from such a comment. Back to the football. It's 3 points. And had we actually maybe played this way at home to Bristol Rovers, Port Vale, Burton, we might have more points on the board. At home, you want to play a more expansive, attractive game. I get that. But at the end of the day, we are, of course, in a results-based business. And if we are apparently chasing down the playoffs, I'll say it again, the playoffs, then points on the board is what we need. Right, on to the playoffs. Stop the playoff talk again. Listen, if we turn over Lincoln, who have scored 387 goals in the last couple of weeks, and then we turn over Peterborough, where's Dean Cox and Chris Dagnall when you need them, then yes, I'll even mention the two words, playoffs. Not until then. But let's face it, as we've said, and most Bills fans agree, it is still a fantastic season. We are now 8 points clear of the team in 11th, so we've got a buffer zone to sit inside that top 10. We can relax a little, but obviously not too much, and as I spoke about last week, we don't want to put our flip-flops on, and we don't want to get on the beach. Richie Wellens is not going to allow that, and the team on Saturday at Stevenage did just that. Came out, performed, ran, tackled, a bit of bite, and got the 3 points. We move on. Another 3 points against Lincoln would be fantastic. And then just who knows, come the Easter break, where we might be. Moving off the pitch, the independent regulator moves ever nearer for football. And as some will have seen, there was a great news piece recorded at Leighton Orient's ground yesterday, where Omar Beckles, Mark Devlin and others spoke very well. Our own guy, Tom Davies, from the Loft Board, talked about how the independent regulator will work and what it will mean for football. And it can't come soon enough. It's too much. The EFL and the FA have been given more than enough time to sort this problem out. But they simply cannot control football to a point where clubs are going bust. Community institutions of over 100 years, your Berries, your Macclesfields, Reading not out the dark yet. Let's face it, Orient were probably 1, maybe 2 months from the same frosty fate that Bury suffered. This can't be allowed to happen. Rivals on the pitch, but not rivals off of it. You won't find many clubs, certainly within the EFL, where fans are not calling for an independent regulator. Yes, there's opposition from the Premier League, and we all expected that. A certain club up the road, their owner, believes that the Premier League is doing a good job. Don't ruin it. Well, it's easy to say when you're in the Premier League and you've got all the riches of everything that is thrown at you. And let's face it, that certain team in Claret and Blue, I didn't see them moaning about some sort of government or council intervention when they were handed the keys to a £100 million stadium, almost for free. It's got to change. Not so much from my point of view of the Premier League and the riches being filed downwards, although that would be a handy in terms of money being shared out on a fairer basis. But EFL clubs are far too subject to rogue owners coming into clubs, asset stripping, moving them far away, new grounds, club colours, ripping them off, players being sold, wages not being paid. We can't allow that to happen. For it to be a flourishing football league, we need to stick to the history of 72 clubs. Yes, we can be rivals, but you can't be rivals with teams that are not there. Let's face it, who would you have rather played Saturday? Stevenage or Southend? Well, probably Stevenage, bearing in mind we got the win, and if we'd have lost to Southend, you could flip it on the other side. But I know I'd rather love a trip to Roots Hall than to that stadium in Hertfordshire. Here we go again, guys. Easter coming up. A nice break before. Let's try and get 6 points on the board. Let's let the independent regulator get hold of football as we move towards the summer. And who knows? It could be an exciting end to the season.
Right, well, thank you very much. Thank you, Matt. And he had a bit of a rant this week, didn't he? He was going on there, wasn't he?
I don't know what he was talking about.
Oh.
I'll ask him.
Yes, they'll ask him. I'm not playing it again. But anyway, yes. Mr. Pegram has signed a 2.5-year contract.
Mr. Who?
Charlie Pegram.
Pegram.
I'd say Pegram, wouldn't you, Tony? Yeah,
Pegram.
Did you say Pegram? I think there's only one person here who would say Pegram.
All right.
I think you just said it.
I said it. There you are. I'll say it again. Pegram. Yeah. Pegram. Whatever you want to call him. Yeah.
Well, saw him start the season at Colchester. Came on second half. Did really well. We only had 10 men. Surprised he hasn't got more run-outs, to be honest. I'm pleased we signed him. Always nice to see someone, one of our own, coming through the ranks.
I think Charlie Pegram and Zeca Biro will get near the team at some stage in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you're pleased with that signing for two and a half years? Yeah,
yeah. From what I've seen of him, there was a couple of players that impressed me that I've seen coming through the ranks. Jeff Tanga was another one. I'm not sure where he is at the moment. Is he still our player?
I think so.
He's out on loan.
Yeah, because I think he's got a future in and around.
I think Pegram going out on loan time was.
See, I wasn't the only one.
Pegram. I think him going out on I think him going out on loan to Waverley, and I think it was another loan as well, wasn't there? I think that's what he needed. Yeah. I don't think he was ready for the first team yet, and I think that they've introduced him slowly. Rightly so. So he's definitely one for the future, Andy. Good to see his 2.5-year deal.
Yeah, well, that shows the club have got faith in him, I think, as well. 2.5 years
I watched the young man's clip on the YouTube they put out on Twitter, and bless him, the lad, you could really tell how excited he was, and it was genuine excitement, and you straight away you warm to him, you think, you know, there's a guy who really is pleased to get this deal done and be a professional footballer.
I'd say that's a real mark of faith from the club, because normally you'd expect them to offer a 12-month contract, you know, and have a look at the guy, and maybe 18 months at a push, but I mean, normally you would be looking at around about a year, 2.5 years. To me,
Martin Ling's always liked 2-year contracts.
Mm.
He's always favoured 2-year deals. So I think the 2.5, because he is so young, also gives Orient a bit of protection, doesn't it? If he does go on to kick on.
Yeah. Sorry, Tony, were you about to say something?
No, I wasn't.
Oh,
I
was. His mouth's moving, but nothing coming out. I thought he was about to say something.
He's got a brother playing for us as well, Charlie. I can't remember his name, which is rather rude of me. But
it's probably Pegram or Pegram.
Well, it's Mr. Pegram. I can't remember his.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yeah. Oh dear! Yes, very good, Tony. Thank you. Yes, right. So coming up over the Easter holidays, of course, a bit of a busy start of. I think was it 5 matches in 15 days? Is it?
That's right.
Lincoln on the Friday, and our friends at Peterborough on the Monday. Two difficult games, but two winnable games, Barry.
Me? Chumble Lincoln is, they don't score enough goals, do they, at the moment? No, I think unbelievable. 16-1, aren't they, in the last three games? What a turnaround. Yeah. Who saw that coming? That is unbelievable, because they could look quite uninspiring against us, didn't they?
Well, no, to be fair to them, they had a lot of injuries at the start of the season. They had a lot of key players missing, and then they have got some real good loanees. They got the lad that was at Colchester, forget his name, forgive me, banging in goals in League 2, Luton player, and he's, I think he scored something like 7 goals in 9 appearances. They're the informed team, aren't they? I mean, frankly, it couldn't come at a worse time. But there you go, that's football. We'll go there. We'll give it a go, no doubt. We've turned up some real surprising results this season on the road.
Yeah.
You know, didn't think we were going to win Saturday, didn't think we were going to win at Oxford, certainly didn't think we were going to win at Portsmouth. So, don't write us off.
That's right, the must-win games, funnily enough, we've done very well in. It's where we slipped up have been the games that have got to stand for a win before.
Exactly.
So let's give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, one thing with Lincoln is they've got that great little fish and chip shop just right near the ground. It's a fantastic little tiny place.
Rochdale's got the best one.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, she's quite opposite. Quite opposite.
Yeah. No, I never forget, actually, I was covering a game there, and I was doing a game for ITV, actually, and it was Lincoln versus somebody, obviously, I can't remember who. And for some reason, I missed where the ground was, and I had a little struggle getting in, and I got to the ground, and I just said to the guy on the desk there, I said, oh, a bit of trouble finding the place, actually, he was the media guy in charge of the media, and he said, well, it shows what an idiot you are. He said, there's and swearing away, there's loads of signs, you moron, he said. And I looked at him, I thought...
He knew you then.
You well, don't,
he wanted
yeah,
you.
But he didn't even know who I was. I could have been from the FA, I could have been anybody.
Did you say, do you know who I am?
I didn't actually, no. I just said, well, you know, I'm here from ITV to do the
because I'm not quite
match
sure.
commentary. But I looked at him, I thought, wow, what a, I've never forgotten it. He's still there, actually. But, I mean, he's I've never forgotten his rudeness. And that's...
We'll get him for it. We'll get
20,
him for
20 odd years later.
And they'll 20
years
later. When I see
yeah.
him.
Yeah. It's about 20
we'll
years
We'll make
ago.
Sure he has so, a long Good Friday.
Yeah. Sort him out. String him up and sort him out for me, boys. Now, obviously, yeah, I mean, the home game is Peterborough, our old rivals. I mean, we seem to do well against them. And I think...
difficult game.
That's the kiss of death.
No, yeah. I think think Peterborough must hate us, really. I mean, what, the playoffs and other things, we've beaten them in, and we do pretty well traditionally.
Sheffield Wednesday, that's how they ate.
Yeah.
Can you believe what happened to them?
It's 4-0 both ways in the playoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, 4-0.
Semi-final, wasn't it?
But, I mean, these two games here could really define whether or not we're going to be in with a shout.
I think these two games will define whether we've got anything to play for the end of the season.
It'll be Kep's first return, I think, since he went. Well, I don't think it was... We didn't play Peterborough last year.
He scored against us, didn't he, at their place?
Yeah.
First time back at ours, that's right, yeah.
And he's with Ruel. I think they've both got picked for the Cyprus
squad. That's right, yeah.
I don't know if they're going to play over the squad members, but it'd be good to see.
All right, Tony. So let's go, Tony, first of all here. I'm going to write these down. Right, Lincoln and Peterborough. What do you think the scores will be, Tony?
Lincoln and Peterborough. I'll go for 1-0 up at Lincoln and a 2-0 win at home.
All right. Peterborough. That's Tony, right. BG, Barry Galvin.
I'm going to say a 2-1 defeat at Lincoln.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we'll beat Peterborough 1-0.
Peterborough 1-0. Okay. And we go Darren Burrows.
We'll lose 4-0 at Lincoln.
Oh my God.
And we'll beat
what a way to win the show.
And we'll beat hold on a minute. Hold on, I'm not finished yet. We'll beat Peterborough 3-1.
You beat Peterborough 3-1.
Until he goes to the mall with most games out of all this, isn't he?
What last time we was in, Darren, do you remember we you predicted a 4-0 loss and we beat, it was Oxford, wasn't it? We're playing so much.
You have to bring that up, don't you?
I do have to bring it up.
It's Exeter. Similar for game with the Exeter game right at the start of the season.
I don't think I've got one prediction right all season, to be honest with you.
I'm actually going to go with two draws. I think we're going to get a 1-1 at Lincoln, and I think we're going to have a 2-2 with Peterborough at home. Yeah, that's what I think.
I'll take my set of results.
Well, you'd be more points. Yeah, it'd be more points. But listen, thanks for coming in, guys, and very nice to see you all after such a long time. I mean, it's been two months.
Lovely to have you back, Andy.
Yeah, has he been away? He's been away.
They took me away. Yeah.
brought him back, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, I know. There'll be a lot of complaints. He's back. Oh, God. Never mind. Right, well, Tony, thanks for coming in, mate. I know it's short notice, and you helped us out tonight.
Absolute pleasure. See you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much. And Barry Galvin.
Thank you,
as usual, thank you for coming in without your guitar, but we'll be playing
thank you.
I've got
guitar.
Your dulcet tones ready to play out, and Darren, thanks for coming in, mate.
My pleasure, Eddie. Good to see you, mate.
And you too, and thanks most of all, of course, to you for listening in. We'll catch you next week. Hopefully we'll have a special guest for you, and we'll leave you with Bash, Barry Galvin's in Nobbosit, and E10. But sadly, comes again. We'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're laying our reason from a 10. We're laying our reason from a 10. This is our club, we are proud. So sing it up and sing aloud. We were formed in 1881. The Claps and Orient had so begun. The old story on it runs. We're laying our reason from E10. Every challenge has come our way. The Orient faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're laying our reason from E10. Laying our reason from E10. Yeah. Day. We're laying our reason from E10. Laying our
fan when Saturday comes again. We're trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're laying an orient from each end.